Thanks for checking out this bonus interview with Dan Cockrell for Chapter 7 of Performance Driven Giving. My name is Kent Sanders, and I'm a writer who collaborated with David Hancock and Bobby Kipper on the book. Just a quick note before we get to the conversation. You may notice that these interviews have a bit of a different feel than what you're used to hearing on a podcast interview or in another setting. The reason is because these have been edited for clarity and flow to let the material on giving really shine through. We appreciate you listening and hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dan Cockrell. Okay, so my first question is, and by the way, this is a stupid question on my part, but your title with Disney was VP of the Magic Kingdom, correct?
That was my last role, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I know you had some other roles as well, but that was your last. Okay.
Yep.
I want to make sure I phrased that correct. So.
Sure.
So as VP of the Magic Kingdom, you were responsible for thousands of cast members. Was it something like 12 or 14,000?
Yeah, 12,000.
So that's a lot of people, obviously. How did you keep your pulse on the team culture? Because, first of all, that's a lot of people, and so many leaders don't really know what's going on with their organization. So what were some ways that you practically kept your ear to the ground and knew what was going on with the culture of your cast members?
Yeah. So that was one of my favorite parts of my job was actually that task was, cause I took that job, very seriously about being responsible and accountable for the 12,000 people that worked at the Magic Kingdom in the park. So, I approached that a few different ways. One was, the first way was role modeling that with my direct reports. So I had six, or five general managers reporting to me that ran the different lines of business, food and beverage, merchandise, entertainment, operations, engineering. And, the big thing I would do with them is, I would treat them the way I wanted them to treat their management team. And by role modeling, you set the tone for your organization. And so when they would come to me with if they made a mistake and they were trying to figure out how to, correct it, I was very much a helper. Because when I had high performers, I knew they were going to make mistakes. And under pressure, you can really dump on somebody and kind of tell them how much they messed up. But I had high responsibility people. I didn't have to tell them. They felt worse than I could make them feel. So it was about problem solving. So my job, my goal was by doing that, the next time they dealt with one of their leaders who did the same thing, they would use me as a model and this would kind of trickle down and every part of the organization would see how we behaved and would understand what that culture needed to be like. And a lot of times by me role modeling, listening and being connected and engaged with them, they would be more likely to do that and the next level down. And so we could sort of work through the org structure and hierarchy that people felt comfortable telling their boss when things were wrong or giving them critical feedback so we can get better. The other thing was just a lot of blood and sweat and elbow grease is, it's getting out there. And so I really thought about all the different tactics and behaviors to become present with the cast members. Now, I didn't know everyone who worked at the Magic Kingdom. We had people coming in and out in college program and part-timers and seasonal cast members. So I knew I wasn't going to be able to meet everyone, but I wanted it to be give it the best chance possible. So the way I kind of structured my day, I would park in the employee parking lot a few times a month and take the bus in just to see it from their point of view. What is it like to park in the cast parking lot, go to costuming, get a costume, take the bus into work? During the holidays, I'd park in the remote parking with them and take the bus in. I would eat regularly at the employee cafeteria and I wouldn't bring people to meet with. I'd go by myself, get my lunch and find a table to sit down with some people. And when I first started doing this, people were kind of like, what's Dan doing here? Don't say anything. It's a trap. And then after a while, people realized that I was really just going down to have my lunch and I was interested in talking to them. And I'd sit down at a table, introduce myself. It'd be a group of college program or a group of managers or a group of cast members. Say, hey guys, can I join you for lunch? And it was kind of awkward right at the beginning. I'd start asking them about who they are, their backgrounds, how their job was. They'd ask me about me and we'd have a great conversation. So just starting to be highly present, I talk about my goal at Magic Kingdom was be approachable and accessible. That's what I wanted my reputation to be. That's what I wanted to emit to people, because I knew that when you're approachable and accessible, you will hear about a lot of things. And I think a lot of people say, well, what if you're too approachable and accessible and everyone's telling you all the bad stuff? I'm like, even better, because that stuff's happening whether you know about it or not. And we get caught up in this ignorance is bliss, right? If I don't know about it, I don't have to worry about it. But I wanted to hear about it because in today's world, you know, if an employee is dissatisfied and they don't know who to talk to, they'll find someone to talk to. And eventually it could be Channel 9 News. It could be OSHA. It could be their congressperson. You know? And so I wanted to make sure we understood that. So the more I did that, the more my leaders were more likely to listen, because they knew, look, if I don't deal with this situation, Dan's going to get to it eventually. And it wasn't to kind of intimidate them, but it's important that we listen. I plastered my, I called it my confidential voicemail number all over the Magic Kingdom. So I invited people and I said, look, you have a great team of leaders here at the Magic Kingdom and they are here to help you. But if you ever feel that you don't know who to talk to, you don't feel comfortable talking to someone, call me and you can leave me a voicemail. It goes right to voicemail. No one's ever going to pick up that phone. If you want it to be anonymous, leave it anonymously. If you'd like me to call you back, leave your name and number. And it was another outlet for people to give me heads up on things. And so once again, people said, are you crazy? You know, you're going to get 50 voicemails a day. I said, well, if I do, we got a problem, because why would 50 people a day be calling me complaining about their work environment? And I got a few calls a week, two or three calls a week would come in. Some were, hey, Dan, you know, I know safety is really important here. And I've called engineering three times to fix a fence and it's not getting fixed. And I've followed up and I can't, you know, I really would like to get this taken care of, because I'm concerned maybe a child will go walk through it or something. Maybe you can help. And I'm like, yeah, I can help. I call the engineering GM. We'd follow up on it. And then we do the root cause analysis. Did this person call? Why didn't it get taken care of? And we'd fix the problem. But I think when you become accessible and approachable to take the pulse of the culture as a leader, you have to be very careful, because you don't want to undermine your leadership team. You don't want to tell your team, look, don't forget about your management team. Just talk to me and I'll fix everything for you. My goal was not to be the hero and the fixer. It was just to make sure that things didn't fall between the cracks. And that's kind of the way I managed it. And I think the third thing is just my disposition. You know, I know when you walk around with a title, an executive title, people are intimidated and they get nervous. And you just have to really always be focused on putting people at ease, shaking their hand, asking them questions, getting to know them, sort of dispel the stereotype they're going to have of you and make it so you're on a one-on-one, even footing relationship. And by the end, if I could do it well, they felt like they were just as important as anyone else at Disney to make that, you know, to get our common purpose and create these great experiences for guests. And I had to make sure they knew that. And sometimes your ego can get the best of you. The way you walk, the way you carry yourself, you kind of get caught up in maybe your title or what you have. And you have to be very careful of that, because the way the magic happens at Disney, it's 12,000 people bringing it to life every day. It wasn't me. And it was always important to remind myself and remind them of that.
Man, I love that. I was going to say you should write a whole book on this, but of course you just did. And it's wonderful.
Oh, good.
And I love it. I really, really love it. So one of the things that we're talking about in this book that we're doing, and really the focus of this chapter, is on team culture and the importance of developing a giving culture in your organization. In your roles at Disney throughout the years, how did you encourage your cast member? Of course, you call them cast members, correct? And not team members, sure. But same thing. Right. How did you encourage your team members to develop giving qualities like generosity, teamwork, volunteering, personal growth, those kinds of things? I'm sure you had some formal initiatives, but also some things that you just practice as part of your culture.
Sure. Well, I think the first big one, which a lot of people don't think about, is if you want people to fit into your culture and fit into the values of your organization, you should do your best to hire people who already have those values and are going to be a good fit. You know, people ask me sometimes, how do you get so many people at Disney to be so nice and kind and service oriented? And I said, well, I'll tell you a secret. We stack the deck. We hire people who are already like that. And a lot of organizations, I think, hire people thinking that they're going to change them or hire them not realizing how important it is, they're going to be a right fit for that culture. And it's not that we don't want diverse points of view. We love to hear diverse points of view from people and really get people to, you know, push the organization to get better. But if let's take teamwork, for example. When I'd interview people coming into Disney, one of the questions was, do you consider yourself, how important is working independently to you? And a lot of people, that's not a trick question. It's not obvious and there's no wrong answer. But if people said, you know, they really like working independently, they do their best work that way, that would be a red flag for me to say, that's great, but you probably aren't going to do well at Disney because nothing, no one does anything independently. Everything's interdependent. Everything is collaborative. And there's a good side to that. And there's a downside. Downsize is everything gets slowed down. Decisions get made much more slowly. Sometimes decisions don't get made at all, which is a shadow side of that. But we'd find people. Do you like working on teams? You know, we'd ask them for examples of having worked on teams. And if we could see that they clearly thrived in that environment, we knew they were going to be a good fit at Disney. So a lot of times it was, let's hire the people who are more likely to do well here. I like to say, you know, let's find those employees who, now I'm going back now, but would stay after school and clap the erasers, get the chalk out of the erasers for the teacher. You know, who are the people who like to do that? Because those are like the people who like service. And if you like service, you're going to love hospitality. And that's what, you know, that's what business Disney's in. I would say again, role modeling. We had at Disney, we had walking clubs to help people get fit. We had, there was Weight Watchers clubs to help people work on their, on that. We had softball leagues. So a lot of times I saw as an executive, if I could get involved in some of these activities and show people that I was, working on my health or working on my education, we would role model that. So people could realize that, you know, success just doesn't come just like sort of naturally. You have to work at it. So I was sure to communicate with people and talk about, you know, my workout schedule and the fact that I run before I come to work, or I was working on my MBA and I wanted people to look at me and say, well, all right, you know, I'm busy. Dan's pretty busy. If he can figure this out, maybe I can. Hmm. And so once again, I know I keep coming back to that, but the importance of role modeling is such a powerful message to convey to people.
Man, that's great. Thank you. So Disney obviously is a culture that's known for being really the pinnacle of innovation and creativity in so many different ways. What would you say is the connection between giving and generosity, but also creativity and innovation? Or is there a connection between those two things?
Yeah, boy, these aren't your standard interview questions. These are good. But to your point, I absolutely think there's a connection. I've been talking about collaboration. Collaboration is giving. When you're generous with your ideas, you're generous with your support. When you can help other people be successful, I'd consider that generosity. And when that happens, creativity and innovation happens. Because typically no one's going to come up with, everyone thinks that there's, you know, lightning strikes and someone thinks of something. It's very seldomly that happens. What usually happens is people are in their environment interacting with other people. And then often they'll interact with concepts or people outside of their normal environment. And they take an idea from another environment and bring it to theirs. Uber is a good example of that. Two guys come out of a bar and like, can't get a taxi. Man, what if every car could be a taxi? How cool would that be? Well, boom, Uber is created. So a lot of this is people being willing to share their ideas with each other. And what happens in a lot of organizations, they create this such a competitive environment. People don't share. They don't share concepts. They don't help others keep growing their ideas or their projects, because that means that other person's going to get ahead of them, and people hold back and everyone suffers and the organization doesn't get all the possible outcomes of being creative. So I think this idea that if people are willing to help each other, the company can get a lot better results. There was a concept, Tom Staggs was the chairman of Parks and Resorts for a few years, and he had a term he called, what's that? Yeah, my wife's helping me out with my memory. Organizational vibrancy. And at first we heard that, we're like, well, I love that term. I don't know what it means, but it sounds really good. And he explained it. He said, look, organizational vibrancy is we are all accountable and responsible for our own behaviors, our own performance, and we always have to perform at a world-class level. Plus, we have to make those around us better. So most companies, you just tell people, be really good at what you do. He said, that's not enough. You have to be good at what you do. And when you're around, people around you need to be able to, because you're there, people around you get better also. And boy, that's a responsibility to put on people's shoulders. But when you get people to start thinking of those behaviors, it's like, all right, I'm doing my job really well and I'm caught up, but man, that person's struggling. Let me go over for a minute and help them out and come back to my own job again. That's when you really start to get incredible results. And it takes an open mindset, a generous mindset to be able to even think that way. Because a lot of people, you know, human nature is you worry about yourself first, your own performance before you, and seldom you won't look around to see who else you can help out. And I think the culture at Disney, we tell stories all the time about how great that is. Tom did that through the term organizational vibrancy. We have another term you'll hear at Disney called green side up that you hear sometimes. And green side up comes from a tradition when we were about to open the Magic Kingdom back in 1971, the day or two before we opened, the sod hadn't been put down yet around the Contemporary and around the outside of the park. It was all dirt. And they said, look, we're opening in like 48 hours. And so the executive team went to all the offices and got all the finance people and all the accountants and all the non-operations people and said, hey, we need your help. Get in your car and come over here. And people got there like, what do you want us to do? We need to lay this sod because we're opening tomorrow. And of course, the finance people said, well, we don't know how to do that. And the person said, you know how you do it? It's green side up. And they started. But once again, that was another story. And that's how we promote that at Disney. We tell stories about times that people have gone outside their role to go above and beyond to help each other. And that creates that culture of, I think, of the generosity creates the culture of creativity and innovation.
Man, that's beautiful. I love that. I've not heard that story before. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. One of the things that has come up in several of the conversations that I've had with people so far is something that is not talked about very often when it comes to this concept of giving and generosity. We normally think of generosity and giving as a one-way thing where as a leader or as a business owner or entrepreneur, you're giving to other people and it's kind of a one-way street. But there's also the opposite of that, which is being open to receiving. So in your years of leadership in different positions, how have you been able to stay open to receiving from other people when you're in roles that are so focused on giving to other people?
Yeah, that's it's funny you mention that because before I would get caught up in that. And I remember my mom telling me, you know, when you get a compliment, you know, you shouldn't tell people, oh no, you don't have to say that. Or no, that's not true. Accept it with grace. You know, someone's giving you a gift and you should accept it just like it's a gift. And by sort of downplaying it, you're sort of not respecting who they are, the fact they're giving that to you. So I learned that's over great. Time, you know, you want it, those moments when people are modest, it makes them feel uncomfortable. But I think instead of feeling uncomfortable, they should graciously accept that and thank the other person for, you know, providing that. Something I learned at Disney along the way was, you know, being generous at one point in my career, being generous for me was find out something that was broken and fix it. Use my authority and my position to get things done. And as I get further on in my career, I started to learn people don't want you just to fix stuff for them. People are resourceful and they want to be part of the solution. You know, no one wants to be given things. And I saw that play out so often that when I had an idea to do something, instead of just going and doing it, the idea was, well, before I do this, let me pull in some employees and some managers. Let me talk to them about it. Let me see if it really is a need. Let's see if they can improve on my idea. And then when we roll it out, let me give them the credit for being involved in this. And I will sort of melt in the background because it's a leader should always be looking to make heroes out of their people. Hmm. I think we get caught up, and especially in the American culture, is we want to be the star. We want to be the hero. You know, you see how often do you see Forbes magazine where they have pictures of the frontline employees on the cover? You know, it's always a picture of the CEO. And that's fine. You know, they're really smart and good at what they do. But we recognize at Disney, no one gets anything done by themselves. And every single employee is responsible to build the brand and to make that place better. And so that idea that you constantly have to be treating everyone as equals, and no matter what your title is. And my dad did a good job of that as I grew up. He said, Dan, don't just remember this. You're not your job. And people are, when you have a title and you move up, people are gonna be really nice to you and they're gonna say all kinds of nice things. They're not saying that to you. They're saying that to your title. And don't get fooled into that. You really have to make personal relationships with people and give to them. And it should be a two-way street. You should be have grace and open. And when people offer you a compliment or offer you help, you should accept that help. And a lot of times, you know, I've seen people not want to accept help. And A, it's not a good idea for them because, you know, you can be helped by somebody. And secondly, I'm not going to go as far as saying it's insulting, but you're not respecting people when you're not willing to accept help from them, because they're offering it. They clearly have something to offer. And you're basically saying, no, I don't want it. And I don't think that's the right message. And I don't think people think they're giving that message, but that's basically what they're doing when they don't open themselves up to receive help.
Wow. I love that. That is so true. This is good stuff. Those are actually all my questions. I've consolidated some things here, but is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, I guess the last thing I've been having a lot of conversations lately. We've been doing some projects around establishing values and what does that mean? And I've had some podcasts actually, even today we've talked about it, and we said, most companies have values and they're either on their website or on the wall. But when you talk to employees, you say, what are your values? Or even the CEO of your company, what are your values here? And they kind of look back, they go, well, I'm sure integrity is on there, 'cause that seems like a good one. Like, they don't know. And what we've concluded is it's not important to memorize the values. It's important to instill the behaviors, because behaviors is what represents your values. And I think a lot of people get caught up in what they talk about, what they believe in. But the reality is, I don't care what you believe in. I care what you do. And so this idea of, if you are a generous person, when was the last time you were generous? You know, and if you believe you're generous, you got to find ways to exhibit and demonstrate that behavior. And if you're not demonstrating it, once again, it's not a judgment. You're not a bad person. It's just not one of your values. Hmm. Your values may be others. There may be other values there. So I think the idea of, you ask someone, are you kind? No one says no. Yeah, I'm kind. Okay, when was the last time you demonstrated a kind act to somebody? Well, if it wasn't today or yesterday, then maybe you're not kind. It doesn't mean you're unkind. It just means you're not leading with that value. So yeah. I just think it's really important that people be very intentful and purposeful about what their values are and find ways to demonstrate it. The same way at the Magic Kingdom, you know, when I worked at Disney, I want to be accessible and approachable. Okay, great. What are you doing? Then I can make a laundry list of all the things I did to walk into work, say hi to employees, schedule time on my calendar to walk the park every day, park in the cast parking lot, eat in the cafeteria with them, be accessible by telephone. And so that really starts to kind of, you put your money where your mouth is. I think that's probably one of the most important concepts.
Man, I love that. I love that. This is pure gold. It really is.
Awesome. Great.
I've got so much good stuff. We could do a whole series. Like, literally, it's really, really good. We hope you enjoyed this interview with Dan Cockrell and hope you'll check out the other conversations in the bonus content for Performance Driven Giving.